Hey, good morning, everybody. This morning, Megillah Daf Chaf Gimel, and the Shiur is sponsored this morning by Gary and Toby Greenstein in memory of their son Yomi, Yosef Menachem Ben Gershon. The Shiur is Le'ilui Nishmaso, and breakfast sponsored by Bagel Munch, Le'ilui Nishmas, Shimon Ben Zeev, and Fega Bas Chaim. All right, Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph, from the top line, the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, B'yom Tov Chamisha, B'yom Kippurim Shisha, etc. This is talking about how many aliyos you have on these different special days. Yom Tov, we have 5 aliyos. Yom Kippur, 6 aliyos. And Shabbos, 7 aliyos. The Gemara here is saying that this is an anonymous Mishnah. And the question is, can we identify this Mishnah with a known Tana, known to us from statements that we have in Brisos that aren't here in the Mishnah? The Gemara says, well, we have a problem. Gemara says, Masnis in Mani. Who is actually the author here? Lo Rabbi Shmuel, velo Rabbi Akiva. We actually have 2 Tanaim who are identified in a Braisa who say things that are similar to the Mishnah, but no one person would say the rulings of the Mishnah. Let's take a look. Desanya says in a Braisa, we have this Braisa in the Tosef that says on the side, B'yom Tov Chamisha, B'yom Kippurim Shisha, B'Shabbos Shiva. Okay, this is the first Tana, Rabbi Yishmael, and he says the hierarchy of days, the way we have it in the Mishnah. Ein Pochsin Mehen, V'ein Mosifin Alehen. There, Rabbi Yishmael. Problem, of course, is that he doesn't have any room for Hosafos. So it says Ein Mosifin Alehen, so that's not our Mishnah. Rabbi Yishmael. That's Rabbi Yishmael Shita, so that doesn't really work in our Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva Omer, B'yom Tov Chamisha, and get ready for this, B'yom Kippurim Shiva, U'B'Shabbos Shisha. He has 6 aliyas every Shabbos and 7 on Yom Kippur. He's also going with the idea of every day that's greater than the other day has an extra aliyah. So Rabbi Akiva's whole view of Shabbos and Yom Kippur is reversed. The Rabbi Akiva puts Yom Kippur above Shabbos. But he says, Ein posim mehanav al mosivin alim. But he has the same policy that we have in our Mishnah about having Hosafis. So now that's the Gemara asked, Mani. So then who's our Mishnah? Rabbi Yishmael kasha Tosafis. Rabbi Yishmael is not able to be our Tana because then Tosafis doesn't work out. Rabbi Akiva kasha shisha v'shiva. Then which one gets 6, which one gets 7 doesn't work. So I'm a Rava. Rava says, well, the answer is that you don't realize, but there's another Tana also. Tana debay Rabbi Shmuel he. The Tana debay Rabbi Shmuel, there's another Tana from the base Rabbi Shmuel, from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, who has the following shita. B'yom Tov Chamisha, B'yom Kippurim Shisha, B'Shabbos Shiva, and Pachim Hanav Al-Mosif and Alehen, Divir Rabbi Shmuel. So this has Rabbi Yishmael having the same exact rules as our Mishnah. So that works out nicely. But the problem is it goes against Rabbi Yishmael. Is Rabbi Yishmael against Rabbi Yishmael? So kasha Rabbi Yishmael ad Rabbi Yishmael. The contradiction between this Rabbi Yishmael and that Rabbi Yishmael. Gemara says, okay, well, Trei Tanoi Aliba de Rabbi Yishmael. Well, there were 2 Tanoim who were quoting things differently in the name of Rabbi Yishmael. So presumably one of them got it right, and the other got it wrong. Okay. Mantana Laha Desanya. Who is the Tana of the following Raisa? Presumably it's going to relate to the things that we've said so far, so let's take a look. There's a Raisa that says, it's a little bit cryptic, a little mysterious. It appears here on the side, it says in Masechet Sofrim, but it says Ayin Sham, which means you're going to, if you look it up there, you'll see a variant, you'll see a different from the way it's quoted here. It says, V'yom tov me'acharin lavo, u'me'maharin latzeis. V'yom kippurim, me'maharin lavo, u'me'acharin latzeis. V'shabbos, me'maharin lavo, u'me'maharin latzeis. So that's the end of this quote from this braisa. So what it say? It contrasts Yom Tov and Yom Kippur and Shabbos. And what does it say? On Yom Tov, you go late, you come late, and you leave early. That's what it says on Yom Tov. You come late and you leave early. On Yom Kippur, you come early and you leave late. And on Shabbos, you come early and you leave early. So Rashi says over here that, what does that mean? You're coming late. What does that mean? And you're leaving. What does all of that mean? So Rashi says here, well, on Yom Tov, you come late. What does that mean, you come? Where are you coming to?
Shul.
Rashi doesn't explain. He says, I'm at shul. You come late to shul. Why are you coming late to shul? Rashi doesn't say, because you're sleeping in. Maybe he means that, because he says, Mishum Simchas Yom Tov. Okay, maybe it means you're sleeping in. I don't know. It could mean that. I thought that he was really getting at you because you're preparing the seudos or anything. But maybe not. Maybe it means you're sleeping in. Okay. All right, let's go with that. On Yom Kippur, you go early, and you stay late, and you leave late. And on Shabbos, it says you go early, and you leave early. You go early, and you leave early. So why are you doing that? Why are you going early and leaving early? Rashi says that on Shabbos, you go early because everything has to be prepared. You can't cook anything, so you may as well go to daven early kivasikin, Rashi writes. Okay, may as well. There's nothing else to do in the morning, so you go daven early. But memaharin letzeis, but leave early mishum onig Shabbos, mishum onig Shabbos. Okay, I don't know, but I guess everybody doesn't like being in shul, and everybody enjoys getting out of shul. So onig Shabbos, so you leave early. That's
Unless
what it seems to say.
It was a dry Kiddush.
I guess so. So they did it right. If they could have waited around, then onig would have. Okay. So anyway. Okay, so I'm not sure exactly what the point of this brace is, but what it's saying here is this difference between Yom Tov and Yom Kippur and Shabbos. So we're trying to figure out if we can account for why you're staying late or leaving early on Yom Kippur versus Shabbos. Gemara has a little bit of a flimsy suggestion over here. Lema Rebbe Akiva. So we should suggest that this might be Rebbe Akiva who would have said such a thing. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva, who's the one, see, what does it say that we're paying attention to? How on Yom Kippur you leave late, but on Shabbos you leave early. Now, well, this is not really a mystery to us. We would have said the same thing. But the Gemara here is trying to assume, well, maybe that reflects the fact that Rabbi Akiva holds a Gavra Yisera on Yom Kippur. You have 7 Aliyahs on Yom Kippur. And only 6 Aliyahs on Shabbos. So maybe that would account for why in Yom Kippur you're leaving late on Shabbos, you're leaving early. I don't know. But that's anyway what it suggests.
Just that when it refers to only Shabbos, that means that Kiddush, that you have to get home in time.
It means you're eating. You eat your
Suda. There's no rush to get home, so you can daven as long as you want. Whereas Shabbos and Yom Tov, you have to get home by a certain Zman. Therefore, that's what they're referring to, only Shabbos.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if once you put in Rashi's explanations for what's behind these behaviors, going early is having to do with eating, so then none of this really should correlate at all. It should all be about when you're eating, when you're not eating. But the Gemara is kind of pretending that none of those things are the point. The point is something intrinsic about how Yom Kippur, there's something that makes you later, and Shabbos you get out earlier. Maybe that's because the davening is different. And maybe that's therefore because there's an extra aliyah. I guess they're like yuckies. If you have an extra aliyah, it's going to mean we're later today. Then, anyway, the Gemara says all we would have said. It says, what are you talking about? I feel Tem Rabbi Shmuel. The nafesh yidur de yoma. The davening is so long on Yom Kippur. Of course you're getting out late. All right. In any case, now the Gemara says, Hani shalosha chamisha v'shiva keneged mi. The fact that we have 3 aliyahs on every regular weekday, on Shabbos afternoon. And you have Chamisha, 5 aliyahs on Yantif, and Shiva, and 7 aliyahs on Shabbos, Keneged Mi. What does that correspond to? What does it correspond to? That's a little funny. What is the Gemara asking? It's asking, it has to correspond. That's like, that was the motivation that the Chazal had in instituting these different things, was in order to correspond, or are we just kind of stepping back and noticing that this is what's going on, and we're reading a certain significance into it. Unclear to me. Tosis earlier had something to say about it, because Tosis earlier said, well, wait a minute, we already said what the 3 is about, but we didn't really put it into this structure of 3 and 5 and 7. Tosis on the top of the page wants to know, well, wait a minute, why are we leaving out 4 and 6? Okay, in any case, we have an answer for 3 and 5 and 7. So we're going to ask the question, why 3, 5, 7? What's that all about? And let's see the answer. Pligiba, well, these different Amorayim had a dispute about what exactly is the significance of the 3 and 5 and 7. So let's see what who was having this dispute. Pligiba, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmani v'chad imei, and one other guy with him, Umano, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. Others have it the other way. Rabbi Shimon ben Vamila means others have it. Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi v'chad imei, Umano, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmani v'amila, but others have the other guy with him. It wasn't Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmani, it was Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani. Anyway, whoever these two are, Chad Amar, one of them said, Keneged Birchas Kohanim. The 3, 5, 7 is the same pattern as the words of the three brachos of Birchas Kohanim. Yivarech Hashem Shemrecha, the first one has three words, and the next one is five words, the next one is seven words. So 3, 5, 7. And then, of course, it becomes our responsibility to see, well, what is it about the Birchas Kohanim that they wanted to capture within the structure of the Kriyas HaTorah in order for that to be a meaningful correspondence? V'chad Amar, but the other one said, it's Keneged Shlosha Shomrei Hasaf, Chamisha Mei Roei Pnei HaMelech, and Shiva Roei Pnei HaMelech. And one is saying, now this corresponds to the three guards and the five visitors to the king, or people who had entree to the king, and seven people who had entree to the king. What is that all about? Rashi says, well, this is referring to the three Shomrei Asaf, is that all of that relates to a pasuk in the end of Malachim and Yirmiyahu. Talk about them in a second. But the five and the seven, Rashi says, that's talking about in Megillas Esther. It refers to the seven people, Rabbi Pnei HaMelech, exactly using those words. And presumably there were five significant ones of them, and Rashi identifies them from also the Pesukim at the end of Malachim. Tosis doesn't find anything about these Roei Pnei HaMelech for Megillas Esther that was going on in the Persian capital that has any bearing on Kriyas HaTorah, and that should not have been any significant number to the Chazal, to the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, even if the Anshei Knesset HaGedola who were doing this may have been familiar with that in their time. But in any case, that's not it. So Tosis identifies a different 3, 5, 7. Two of them, the same as pretty much what Rashi was saying. But it had to do with this. When Nebuchadnezzar exiled the Jewish community from Eretz Yisrael, from Yerushalayim in particular, it identifies that Nebuzaradan, the Rav HaTabachim, was exiled in addition to murdering everybody there, but also exiled certain leaders, and identifies the leaders were, and it tells this same account twice. It tells this account once at the end, it's word for word, the end of Malachim and the end of Yirmiyahu, both places, because okay, in any case, the same story is told in both of those places. In one place, it says, and Nebuzaradan got rid of the three Shomrei Hasaf, the main guards, and the five Roei Pnei HaMelech, and the five people who were like in the special, the executive council of the king. The other place, it says, and the seven Roei Pnei HaMelech, the seven executive council of the king. So putting it all together, so presumably, and this is the way it's being said over here, is that the five were the core, the main people of the executive council. The other one was like the broader executive council. In any case, all of that refers to what was the structure that we had in the Beis HaMikdash. These were the people, the liaisons between the Mikdash and the Melech, and the guards in the Mikdash. So Rashi says it all has to do with the Malchus, because you want to try Kulan, it says, Me'ein Dvar Malchus. Something about the majesty of the experience of Kriyas HaTorah, and that's what they were trying to capture, or that's at least what they were noticing in the Kriyas HaTorah. could be having to do with a different thing, about the relationship between the Torah and the Kriyas HaTorah and the Mikdash itself. But, all right. In any case, so these are all, the different correspondences that you find of the 3 and 5 and 7 structure. Amalei Abaye. Wait a minute, I think we skipped something here. Tani Rav Yosef. Also, Rav Yosef also quoted a Braisa. Gimel Chamisha v'Shiva Shalosha Shomri Hasaf. Chamisha Mei Roe Pnei HaMelech and Shiva Roe Pnei HaMelech. And that's what Rav Yosef was telling the Talmidim. Amalei Abaye. Abaye, one of Rav Yosef's prominent Talmidim, said to him, Adu Idna, my time Melo Parish Lanmar. Hey, why did you never tell us this before? Amarle, ooh, lo hava yadana ditzarich dule. I didn't realize you needed this. Meaning, I didn't realize you didn't know this. Umi ba'isu minoi mil sevilo amri lachu. Have you ever needed me to tell you anything that I didn't tell you? Okay, so that's a. So Abaye was saying, wow, this is such a great idea, and you've been withholding this from us. And he said, I didn't realize you didn't know. Okay. Amar le Yaakov mina le Rav Yehuda. It sounds a little bit like it's saying Yaakov the Apikoros. So Tosis on the side over here says, Amar Yaakov mitza Garcina. No. It's Yaakov mitza, a guy from mitza. Not Mina. You wouldn't have quoted a guy named Yaakov the Apikoros here in the Gemara Tosafos. In any case, L'Rav Yehuda, Hani Shisha the Yom Kippur connected me. What's the significance of the six aliyas of Yom Kippur? Amalei, connected Shisha, She'amdu mimino shel Ezra, V'shisha mismolo. To correspond to the six guys on Ezra's right and six guys on Ezra's left. It's describing at that point. And Nehemiah describes the opening of the Beis HaMikdash in the first day, and they had a big Kriyas HaTorah going on there. I guess it was Rosh Hashanah.
Six on the right, six on the left. Yeah,
and Ezra the Kohen was standing there, and he had... Yeah, I guess. And these people were prominent people, were standing there around the Bima, I guess. And it says, Al Migdal Eitz Asherasu Lidavar. And Vayamod Etzlo, and it lists them. Matisya, and Shema, and Anya, and Uriah, and Hilkiah, and Masiya, and Yalyamino, and Mismalo. It's Pedaya, Mishael, and Malchiah, and Husham, and Hashabdana, and Zachariah, Meshulam. So the Gemara, noticing, can't sneak anything past the Gemara here, it says, Hani Shiva Havu, but that's seven, if you count them up. The ones on the right are six, but the ones on the left says are seven. Mara says, no, you read it wrong. You made it seem as if each one of these guys had one name. The last one, Zechariah Meshulam, is really one guy. Hainu Zechariah, Hainu Meshulam. Amai Karele Meshulam, de Mishlam Beovdei. Mishlam Beovdei, Rashi just translates the words from Aramaic into Hebrew, de Tamim B'ma'asav, that he was pure. So his nickname was Zachariah Meshulam. Okay, six guys. All right, Tana Rabbanan. Now we have some rules of Kriyas HaTorah. This next one is somewhat controversial, significant. Tana Rabbanan. Raisa says the following. Hakol Olim Leminyan Shiva. Anybody can go up there among the seven aliyas of Shabbos. Afilu Katan, even if he's not bar mitzvah. Afilu Isha, even if she's a woman. Aval Amru Chachamim. But the Chachamim said, Isha lo tikra b'Torah. The woman should not get called up as an aliyah to read. Remember, being called up means reading. Should not read. Mipnei kvod hatzibor, out of sensitivity to the dignity of the tzibor.
So which rabbis are saying that they can be?
Right, so it's a funny way to present it. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't as if they changed it over time, maybe, and maybe that is what it says. Maybe originally it was one way, and then later Chachamim changed it, and maybe it was that everybody theoretically ought to go up, and then they... they didn't practice. They disallowed the woman getting aliyah. This is a very powerful statement for a few reasons. One reason, well, look, a lot of people nowadays read this and they think, hey, let's resurrect the original plan and have women getting the aliyah. Okay, that's one group. But let me just tell you what the other significance is, and you don't have as many people who are vocally making this point, which is, but the fact that the woman is even theoretically eligible to come up means that she is supposed to be part of the Kriyas HaTorah also, just not to be up there laning, which means she should be in shul, listening, and paying attention just like the men. That part is a clearer message from what it says over here. And that is what we're very careless about, and that's not really right.
No, the half of the women have is they're taking care of the kids.
Okay, that's fine also. But when they come to shul after Kriyas HaTorah, or they come to shul and daven throughout the Kriyas HaTorah, which is much more typical, it's not as common to be in shul and caught up and able to be participating in the sense of paying attention and following along. So that's
men davening during Kriyas HaTorah too.
Instead of
waiting for the rest. Would you say that if a woman showed up at Kriyas HaTorah, it would be more important to listen to this Kriyas HaTorah and then daven afterwards, since there's no zman for them on Bila?
I'm not sure I would say that. I don't know how to balance those priorities. But what I would say was,
Come earlier.
As a plan. In other words, you're saying, what if it didn't happen? But I'm saying, but don't plan every week that way.
That's how some people just plan.
They don't consider it a priority at all.
I think for some reason that's become a social...
Right, I realize. That's what I mean.
And that's a social norm, exactly.
No, I understand. And it's because the thinking is that they're not involved here. They can't participate. They don't count in the minyan. They're not part of this. It's not for them. They're just complete spectators to this. So they're not really participants.
They are in a certain sense, but in a certain other sense,
everybody in the shul, the men and the women, are identical from that perspective. They're all there to hear Dvar Hashem in the Kriyas HaTorah, and that's what it's for. Okay. And it's even more than that. We're going to see a little bit about the Targum.
That it would be the same thing like in growing up in, I'm not trying to derail the chair, but in elementary school, like where men, boys, they dive in after a certain age and hear Kriyas HaTorah, and they're used to the minyan instruction, where even throughout girls in high school, there's no minyan structure, there's no Kriyas HaTorah. There's no emphasis on all. So
yeah, meaning it's hard to recover from that long training period. When that's normal life.
I need to start with the educators at Stern.
Yeah. No, we have to start at YBH. We have to start all the way down. That's what you're talking about. I know. Okay, what can we do? Sometimes these kinds of things, there are social pressures that override sometimes these theoretical statements here that the Gemara makes. In any case, the other issue, of course, of the statement is the cotton question. So a cotton, according to this, they never disallowed the cotton. So it says a kid also should be able to be called up and get an aliyah. Our practice is not to, but we do continue the practice of a cotton being able to be called up for maftir, ironically enough, that maftir is something that they never took that away. We're going to see in the next mishnah, in the next daf and chav dalet, that's explicit. And that's what they point out. They point out that that the cotton doesn't get called up for regular aliyah, but called up for maftir. The irony, of course, is that at our bar mitzvah, we call up a kid for maftir as if to show that now this kid is an adult, but that doesn't make any sense because this kid could have gotten the maftir last week and the week before, too. It doesn't show anything. That's the irony.
There's a repetitive of the last aliyah.
Ah, so that's a good point, too. And that, anyway, is actually, that point is coming up a little bit over here. All right, let's take a look here. Iboilahu. Okay, this is what they were wondering. Maftir, we're aware that there's such a thing as a maftir. The maftir is what the Mishnah calls hamaftir benavi, the one who is reading the passage from the Navi. Mahu shayala leminyan shiva. The history of maftir benavi is a little bit vague. It doesn't exactly say that that dates back to Anshei Knesset Gedola times. The Gaonim, I think that in some of the writings of the Gaonim, you find that they suggested that this was a historical necessity. The introduction of reading the passage from Navi, because it may have been at some time that there was a ban against Torah reading, and so they adapted to having a Navi reading. I guess they didn't ban that, and so then eventually it was relaxed, so they kind of incorporated it. I'm not sure if we're bound to accept that history, but in any case, it says that there's a reading from the Navi as well as a reading from the Torah under certain conditions, and the question is, what is the rule? Does the maftir, so it says that, I think we're going to see earlier, the reason that the maftir, here we're going to see a few lines down, the maftir, the reader of the Navi, has to first read a passage from the Torah first, and then also read from Navi. So that passage that he's reading from the Torah, is that part, is that one of the aliyahs, or is that an addition, is that a supplemental to the regular aliyahs of the day? So this is what they were wondering. Can the maftir count towards the seven? Rav Huna v'Rav Yirmiya. Suwa morayim. Rav Huna v'Rav Yirmiya v'Rav Chadamer Ola v'Chadamer Eina Ola. The machlokes amorayim, whether he counts or doesn't count. Mamdamer Ola, the one who holds that it counts towards the seven, the Hakari, because he's reading the Torah, he's getting an aliyah, so it should count. Mamdamer Eina Ola, Kede Ula. He says, yeah, but that doesn't prove anything. Because of what Ula said. The Amr Ula, Mipnei Maham after Ben Avi Tzarech Sheyukar B'Tor Tchila. Why did they insist that the Navi reader also reads some Sukkim first? Mipnei Kavod HaTorah. It's out of Kavod HaTorah. The thinking is that you don't want the Navi reading to be equated with the Torah reading. And so we have somebody who's going to read the Torah reading has to first read some from the Torah to show this is the Torah, and then in addition there's also Navi, so as to make it clear that they're not to be equated.
You can have who gets Shvi.
Right, but the point is that his main job is the Navi reading, and the Torah reading is really a courtesy reading, not so much because per se that you want him to be the reader of the Torah, but it's just that we get out of Kavod HaTorah. The Kavod HaMishum Kavod HaTorah Hu L'Minyan Lo Salik. So because really the only reason that we're reading anything here is out of Kavod HaTorah, so we don't necessarily need that person to be part of the seven or the five or the six Olim, whatever the Chovas Hayom is. Okay, you don't have to necessarily be persuaded by this. That's Machlokas. Machlokas is these are the two sides. So, Meisavei. So here they are trying to object to one or the other side. Sometimes when there's a mesave like this, you don't know which side is being objected to. The mesave, literally the word mesave, is the Hebrew word meshivim. It's that they responded or reacted. And it's usually a reaction as if it's an objection from a earlier source. Hamaftir benavi lo yefchos me'eshem v'yechad psukim. When you're reading the Haftarah and Navi, you have to make sure to choose a selection and not stop within 21 psukim. It has to be a 21 pasuk long navi, haftarah. Why 21? Keneged shiva shakara b'torah, to correspond to the seven aliyahs, and each aliyah is three psukim long. So you have to have 21 Torah psukim in the Torah. So you need to have 21 psukim in navi. The yamisa, but if you're going to say that the maftir is on top of the seven kriyas, which means it's eight aliyahs, so then you should have 24. The Amisa, Isa meaning if, and if you're going to say, and Rashi says that he doesn't count, that the Maftir is an eighth Aliyah, so then you would have needed to have 24. Yesrim v'yarvohavian. More answers, the same answer. It says, well, not really. Kivan demishim kavot Torahu, kenegdo nami loboi. Since really that eighth Aliyah, the Maftir Aliyah, was only there for out of Kavod HaTorah, it doesn't really count as a bona fide aliyah, the genuine aliyah, that should get its own recognition to need the 24. The Rishonim over here, they say, hold on a second, wouldn't it have been a better explanation, a better argument for the deflection of this kasha? Couldn't it have just said simply, but they don't read three additional psukim? They're just rereading the old psukim. And if you're not reading three additional psukim, so then why should you have to read three additional psukim of the Navi? So the Rishonim say, so you see, that at their time, they were presumably not rereading for the Maftir, that the Maftir was actually reading on. So this question about whether it would count or not count seems to even be, even if they're reading on. That still might not count necessarily in seven. So it may need seven, and then the eighth Aliyah, and even eighth Aliyah, even if they didn't finish the whole Parsha by seven.
Don't you think that by reading the same number of lines as you are in the Torah, you're equating the Navis on equal levels?
That's a good point. It's really hard to know what the sensitivities are supposed to be for these things. So they weren't bothered by it.
And you're not arguing. Okay.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Any case. And then the Rishonim over here, they present the picture of the laning of the Kriyas HaTorah the way we have it, which is, what's the psak? The Gemara never has a psak on the yes part of the Olim or no part, whether it's Olim and Yeshiva, not Olim and Yeshiva. It doesn't give a psak here. Just right at the end. That was it. So they say, this is what some of the Rishonim say. The Tosfos over here first put a little bit, and the Rishonim in the back say more. What we do is we put a Kaddish there. They didn't used to have the Kaddish after the seven Aliyahs, so we finish up the whole thing. We put a Kaddish as if to say we're done. And so the Maftir would be supplemental. But we don't do that on fast days, right? We don't do that on fast days. We have a Maftir who's the Shlishi. We don't have the Maftir being the fourth Aliyah. So they point out, okay, so really we're holding Meikar Hadin, the Maftir is Ola. The Maftir could be part of the core Olim. It's just that when you have the luxury of making a Hosafa, so you may as well take advantage of that. Avoid this whole Machlokas. You say a Kaddish, you make a Hosafa, and then one way or the other, pretty much everybody would be okay with what you're doing, whether Ola or not Ola. It's only when you're stuck, like on a fast day, where you really are forced to commit to either he is part of the Aliyah or not part of it. So then we have to say, yes, Ola Laminian Shiva.
What about Chol HaMoed?
Yeah, what about Yom Tov?
There's no Maftir. What's the Maftir for Chol HaMoed?
Skip to a Kraftim? Isn't that like
a... Oh, you mean like as the Chol HaMoed...
That's the fourth Aliyah.
That's also Shabbos, you mean? Or Chol HaMoed, that's
no,
also...
No,
what do you mean?
The fourth Aliyah. The fourth Aliyah of Chol HaMoed. But that's the supposed to be the fourth.
Well, this only begins when you're reading Maftir.
I know.
So...
Haftorah, you mean, or Maftir?
Both.
When you have an Haftorah?
Right.
Oh, okay. Because they...
Oh, you mean we call it Maftir when you do it when... Oh,
when
I see.
The fourth Aliyah on Chol HaMoed.
When you do... well, all right. That's not really right to call that Maftir. That's just
what
the Chovah Seyam. That's a different... What?
But Yom Tov, though.
So on Yom Tov, we said that there's a question in the Rishonim about whether you can make Hosafos on Yom Tov. So this whole structure is assuming that you can, and because we aren't sure that we aren't sure of our ground really over there, so we won't do above what was I guess kind of forced upon us because of all these other uncertainties. All right, Maskifla Rava. Rava attacks him. He says, "Well, how can you have such a rule about 21 psukim? V'harei olo sechem sfu." Wait a minute. But see, he identifies a haftarah that that doesn't have 21 psukim, and we don't avoid that. So there apparently isn't really any such rule of a 21 pasuk rule. But my answer is, well, that's not the same. Shani hasam desalak inyana. Well, that's different. That's because, you know, the sefem sfu, you get to the end of the parak. And it doesn't pay to start the next thing. It's an unrelated thing. So when the topic ends, less than 21 psukim, that's good enough. In other words, the 21 pasuk thing is when you have a lot of psukim, you could choose long segments. So you need to have at least 21 psukim. But when you have, and it happens to be that if you ever look at Haftaras, you'll find that there are a lot of them that are 21 psukim long. So it happens to be. So, but many of them are less. So the ones that are less is because you hit the end of a topic and then the next thing veers off and it doesn't really relate. And therefore, we're being told over here in the Gemara is that that's enough of an excuse to have a smaller haftarah than the 21 pasuk minimum. The Gemara says, wait a minute, but But that can't be the only rule. Ve'echad de lo salak inyana lo. But let's say the topic is not concluded until much longer. You're going to still insist on 21 psukim, but we have a counterproof. Ve'ha'amar Rav Shmuel bar Abba. But Rav Shmuel bar Abba said, Zimnin sagin, there were numerous occasions, Hava ko'imina, when I was standing, Kamed Reb Yochanan. In front of Reb Yochanan, I guess they called me up to read the Haftarah. Vigihava Karinan Asara Psuke. And we just read 10 psukim, and I'm just getting warmed up. And Amar Lan Afsiku. And he says, okay, that's enough. Stop. What's with that? So the Gemara answers, oh, well, you mean that was with Reb Yochanan. Makom Sheyesh Turgaman Shani. Well, when your Haftarah experience is one where you also have a translator, you have a simultaneous translation going on, that's different. If you have your Haftarah just, you read the whole thing straight, then 21 psukim minimum. But if you're going to have the Targum institution, the guy next to you who's going to be translating what you're reading, and this is going to be explained a little bit in the next daf, that how that's done. But in Navi, it's going to be, you can read it, you can feed him a few psukim at a time, and then you wait, and then he does the translation, and so that's going to double the amount of time. Maybe even more than double the amount of time. I don't know exactly how it was coordinated, but it'll take a lot of extra time. So that's why 10 psukim is enough. Malkam Sheish Turguman, Shani Ditani, Rav Tachlifa Bar Shmuel, Loshana Wal Malkam Shein Turguman. Rav Tachlifa Bar Shmuel says that that rule about 21 psukim is only without a mitar game. Aval Malkam Sheish Turguman, Posek. Rashi says, why would you stop early? Rashi says, because of Torah Litzibur, because of Tircha Litzibur, which is a really unusual usage of Tircha Litzibur. Normally, Tircha Litzibur, we're always sensitive to, you know, not wasting the tzibur's time. But that usually has to do with when we're actually wasting time. When we're just sitting there, we're rolling the Torah, we're doing something that people are just sitting around doing nothing. But usually listening to the Haftarah is not really a Tirchat Tzibura. So it's just funny that this is an actual place where Rashi is saying, if the laning goes on too long, that's Tirchat Tzibura. Okay. And that's the justification for stopping. Tosus makes a comment over here, which is, you mean there's such a thing as places where they did have the Targum and places where they didn't have the Targum? Wow. So I guess that justifies why we don't do Targum. Because even though the Mishnayos talk about the Targum as if this is like a part of the institution of Kriyas HaTorah and it's pretty standard, but you see from over here that it's not true, at least for Haftaras. And Tosfos over here makes the comment about how, well, so that's why we've eliminated the Targum even for the Kriyas HaTorah itself. So we don't have a Mitar game. We don't have translations going on. Okay, at least on regular Shabbos. The next Amud, the Tosas on Chavdal Hamud Aleph, refers to the fact that we do still have a Mitar game for some of the special Haftaras. Okay, Mishnah. This is a long sentence which you don't get actually what the context here of this mission is until around 8 lines down. So the point of this mission is we're about to list things that require a minyan. So here's the list. Ein, without a minyan, you're not allowed to. Parsen alashma. Ein over lifnei ateva. Ein osin eskapehem. Ein korin b'torah. Ein maftirin b'navi. Ein osin mamadu moshav. Ein omrin birchas aveilim. V'tanchumei aveilim. V'birchas chasanim. V'ein mezamnim b'shem. All of it, pachos meyasara. If you don't have a minyan, so what are all these things? Parson alashma. Well, parson alashma is a vague expression over here. It refers to an institution that the Rishonim go on and on and on and on about what the thing is. From our perspective, I think it's simplest to say it means saying baruchu and kaddish. The kaddish and baruchu before shema, introducing the shema. That's what's being identified over here. The actual experience of Parsin al-Hashma was something Rashi and Tosfos and the Rishonim are all talk about, where the what to do if people daven without a minyan and then we suddenly find that we do have a minyan. Should we do something now that's like a mini minyan? so that we can do maybe Chazar Sashatz, maybe even though everybody davened already, but that's always what happens with a minyan, is everybody davened, and you still do Chazar Sashatz. So everybody davened separately over here, so then maybe we're supposed to do Chazar Sashatz, maybe, and if you're going to do that, so then you shouldn't just start at Chazar Sashatz, you should really start back at Baruch Hu, but you're not going to say the whole thing, say it at all. So they have this institution of a Baruch Hu with a half of the bracha of Shema, which has the Kedusha part, and then Shemona Esrei with its Kedusha part. So in the interests of trying to do a Kedusha, which is also what was behind when we do a Haicha Kedusha for Mincha time, sometimes when you're in a rush and you do a Haicha Kedusha, the point of it is you want to try to get Kedusha in a way that you can kind of trim out everything else and have everybody kind of davening B'yachidus really, but also still have the opportunity to do Kedusha. Well, there's another Kedusha, the Kedusha of the Birchas Kriyas Shema. So they want to try to pull that off too. So that's what they would do, a Haifa Kedusha double. They would do a Haifa Kedusha for Shafris, for the Birchas Kriyas Shema, that. Anyway, all of that, all is only if you have a minion. Okay. They ain't over Lifnei Yateva, and you don't get a Chazan up there doing Chazar Sashat. So you know, in his Kapen, you don't do Duchening less than a minion. In Korn B'Torah, you don't have Kriyas HaTorah less than a minion. In Maftir Ben Avi, you don't have Haftarah if you have less than a minion. Enos and Mamadu Moshav. So now we're outside of Shul. Now we're in other life experiences that need a minyan. Enos and Mamadu Moshav. Mamadu Moshav is something that they used to do in conjunction with a funeral, a levaya, so that they would be. I think I was going to say a little bit about this. Okay, it's some kind of a practice that you do at a levaya. Ve'en omrim birchas aveilim, and you don't say the birchas aveilim. And you don't do the Tanchume Aveilim if you have less than a minion. Birkas Aveilim and Tanchume Aveilim. The Tosas over here say that Birkas Aveilim is not the special benching that you say in the Beis Avel, at least at the Havra. It's not that, because that they don't think you needs a minion. This is a different kind of a thing which we don't even do anymore. Rashi refers to, you would say a bracha to the Menachemin, and the Menachemin would say a bracha to the Aveilim, and okay, so that would need a minyan. We don't have this practice. And Tanchume Aveilim is essentially what we do is what's called Shura, which is when you have the Aveilim walking between the people. So it says that would need a minyan. Birkas Chasanim is Shavar Brachas. So we know that needs a minyan. The Ein Mizamnin B'Shem, and you don't do a Zimun for benching. When you do benching, if you have a minion, then you say Shem Hashem. If you don't have a minion, then you can't say Shem Hashem. That's this Mishnah. Tachas Me'asara. The Gemara is going to go into some of them. Ubekarkos Tisha V'Kohen V'Adam Kiyotzi Behen. And it says in the Mishnah that if you have to have a Beis Din doing an assessment of the value of real estate for purposes of the Pidyon, which is that if Hekdesh is in possession of any kind of property that they don't personally need, they don't actually need it, so then they're just going to auction it off, or they're going to sell it off, and they're going to have the original owner always have first crack at buying it back. So you have to establish some kind of a price for the worth of the things. So you need to have some people who are good at assessing the market value of different things. When it comes to regular, ordinary objects like regular chattel and all of that, you just get a Beis Din. Three people could be able to do the assessment. But when it comes to karka, real estate assessments, that has to be done through a Beis Din of Tisha V'Kohen. You need not just a minion, it has to be a minion of which one is a Kohen. V'Adam Keyotzi B'Hen. Also, to establish the value of a human, same kind of a thing. We'll talk in the Gemara a little bit about what the purpose of establishing the value of a human. Gemara says, Minahani Mili, how do you know the first bunch of things in the Mishnah, which are the Dvarim Shebikdusha? How do you know the Dvarim Shebikdusha need a minyan? The Amar Rabbi, Amar Bchia Baraba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the Amar Kra, Pasuk says, and this is the Amorayim that are reconstructing the Drasha from the Tanayim. Pasuk says, V'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. I am, in a certain sense, the kiddush of me, kiddush Hashem, in other words, kiddush Hashem, happens b'soch b'nei Yisrael, among the b'nei Yisrael. Kol davar shebekdusha lo hei pachos me'asara. All davar shebekdusha needs a minion. The Gemara said, what do you see from that? A minion. B'soch b'nei Yisrael doesn't always need a minion, does it? So my mashma, where do you see that? D'tani Rabbi Chiya, asya toch toch. Rabbi Chiya says, no, you have to continue with the drasha, because b'soch b'nei Yisrael, toch b'nei Yisrael, the word toch is used in a drasha, gzeirah shava, with the other toch. Namely what? Ksivacha v'nikdashi b'soch b'nei Yisrael, uksivasam, hibadlu mitocha eida hazos. So what is the hibadlu? Hibadlu is talking about Korach, Aras Korach. Well, Aras Korach doesn't have 10. That had like 250. The one says, no, you're not done yet. Because it says, ha'eda hazos. How big was the eda? So it says, asya eda eda. Ksiv hasam, admasi la'eda hara hazos. When Hashem was angry at the meraglim, he calls them an eda ra, an evil eda. What's the eda? That was the 12 meraglim minus the two good ones, minus Yeshua and Kali. So that was the 10. So you see, ten is called an eda, and ibad mitoch ha'eda hazos has toch, and nikdashti b'soch, then Israel means if they have an eda, 10, a minion, that's enough for a kiddush Hashem. So all dvarim shabik dusha need a minion. That's the drasha of our Gemara. Yerushalmi has a different drasha, and okay, two dots. So wait a minute. So how many elements of our Mishnah were explained by saying this? So apparently that's going to include Parson Alashma and Over Lifnei Teva and Osen Eskapein and Korin B'Torah and Maftirin B'Navi, and that's why the next line of the Mishnah here that we've been quoting is Ein Osen Ma'amaru Moshe Pachas Me'asara. Okay, so you might want to kind of wonder, why should all of those things have been called Dvarim Shebik Dusha? That you do them only with a minion. In any case, Ma'amaru Moshe, what's that all about? Gemara says, Kivan Devoy Lememer, Imdu Yikaram Amodu, Shvu Yikaram Shvu. Because part of the procedure is that you have to tell everybody, okay, stand, cherished people, stand, sit, dear people, sit. So if you're already going to do such a ceremony like that, or Rashi even says, and you're going to have to get somebody who's going to lead that, and Rashi even says, you're going to have to call them dear people. So batzer me'asar lav orach ara. Less than a minion, lav orach ara. The words lav orach ara literally mean in Hebrew, eino derech eretz. It's not derech eretz. Okay, two dots. So that's the reason why you need a minion. So to comply with derech eretz. The eino omrim birkas aveilim and birkas chasen, etc. Okay, my birkas aveilim, what is that? Gemara says, oh, that's referring to the birkas rechava. The amar Rabbi Yitzchak, amar Rabbi Yochanan, birkas aveilim, Beyasara, but ain aveilim in a minion. The aveilim don't count towards that minion. Because chasanim, though, the shever brachas needs a minion, the chasanim in a minion, and the chasanim can count in the minion. But that didn't really explain what it was, the birchas rechava, but like that's what the Rishonim are saying. It's that a thing that we don't exactly do ourselves here. But the shever brachas that needs a minion, and the chasan can count. All right, ein mezamnin al hamazon b'shem. Slightly different girsa, but it means that you don't do benching with shem Hashem unless you have a minion. And the reason why, and the Gemara doesn't say, because it's davar shebikdusha. In other words, it needs to be explained. They didn't think that it already explained it with davar shebikdusha. It says kivan deboy lemeimer nevarach elokeinu. Since the words that you're going to have to use are, let's say, bracha to Hashem, batzer me'asara lavorach ara. It's not derech eretz to say such a thing without a minion. We're not going to necessarily be as bothered by it. The sensitivity here, I don't think, is one that everybody would feel. But this is the way the Chazal are understanding, that they only instituted Zimun B'Shem with a minion because of derech eretz considerations. And the Abra Girsa here in the Gemara is Nevarach Leilo Keinu. Just to be aware that that's not Abra Girsa. Don't say Leilo Keinu. Abra Girsa is Nevarach Elo Keinu without the Lamed. There's an issue among the Rishonim. Okay, two dots. HaKarkos Tishrei Kohen V'Adam Kiyotze Behen. When you're being assessing the value of property, of real estate, you need a minion of a Beis Din of 10, and that includes a Kohen and has to be among them. Minahani Mili. Where does that come from? Amar Shmuel. Well, because when you look through the Psukim in Bahar, which talk about assessing values of different objects for hektish purposes, Asara Kohanim Ksuvim B'Parsha. It keeps saying all the time, Erecha Kohen, Asara Kohen, and then Mehemida Kohen, as if the Kohen is necessary for these actions. So therefore what? So it sounds like you would need 10 Kohanim. No, that's the way a beginner would think. But the Tanoim don't think that way. It's Chad Legufe. The first time it refers to the Kohen, that means Legufe. That means you need a Kohen. The Idach and all the other ones are Miut Achar Miut. It's all Miut Achar Miut, and one of the Drasha policies is whenever the Gemara does Miut Achar Miut, it's an exclusion, it's a limiting thing, following another limiting thing. Ein Miut Achar Miut Ella, the opposite, Lerabos. So Tisha Yisraelim V'chad Kohen. Okay, all Drasha, so you have to be sensitized to the method. And so this would make a lot of sense if you were a Tana. But then the Gemara says, wait a second. But we're familiar with Drasha techniques, and it still doesn't really make a lot of sense. Ve'ema chamisha kohanim v'chamisha yisraelim. Kasha. Well, wait a minute. But shouldn't the Tanoim have said that you need a Kohen, and then the next one is a Miut Achar Miut, so that could be Yisrael. But then we're back to default. So now the Kohen is the Legufe. So now Miut Achar Miut. So you should have needed a... five Kohanim, and then five could be anybody. Kasha, yeah, the Gemara says, well, that's true. That could have been a legitimate way to darshan the psukim. They didn't do it. So, Kasha, okay. So, it doesn't matter because we're just trying to reconstruct the thinking of the Tanaim when they made this rule. But in any case, the drasha could have gone both ways. All right, Tudatsi Adam Kyotsi Bohen. But and assessing the value of a human likewise needs a minion, of which one is a Kohen? Adam Mikadosh. What are you talking about? When do you ever have the apidion of a human? So Tosus right away point out of here, what does that mean? An Eved Kenani is a human, and you can maktish him just like your behemoth, just like an object. And so Tosus thinks that, nah, the Gemara didn't think that that was what the Mishnah referred to, because it would always identify avadim as the word avadim. Karka avadim ushtarz. We always refer to avadim together with karka, if you mean Eved, but this is not Eved, it says Adam. So it must mean somebody who's not an Eved Kenani. Once it's not Eved Kenani, whether it's Eved Ivri or a regular non-Eved altogether, that would be Adam. So that's the question. Mikadosh. You can't be Maktish person. Amar Rebbe Yavo, Biomer Damai Alai. It's we're talking about a person who says, I'm Maktish my value to Hektish. Or that person's value, whatever. I'm Maktish the value of the person. Desanya, Haomer, Damai Alai. So Shaman Osoki Eved. You have to figure out how much he's worth. Well, you can't figure out how much a human is worth. What kind of a worth can you pin on a human? What market value does a human have? It says, like a slave. If you can sell the Eved and the Shuk, so then you determine what value he is as a slave. The Eved is Kishle Karka. Oh, so once you're talking about a slave, so that is a heck din of a Karka. The Chsiv, like it says in the Pasuk in Bahar, that when you have an Eved Kenani, his Nachal Temo, some... If you have an Eved Kenani, you own them like your property, and they remain your possession forever, and then when you die, they go in inheritance to the next generation forever, and therefore they have the same status as an Achuza, as your property, that's your home, estate, and so therefore it's Dino Kekarka, and you would need the same rules as is required for Karka. Okay, we're going to stop here.
Good.
How many people watch?